Hello, I am your host, Kathy Chester, and welcome to the Move It or Lose It podcast, a podcast about all things that move the mind, body, and soul. The Move It or Lose It podcast is for information, awareness, and inspirational purposes only. I am not a doctor, and I don't even play one on TV. So please consult with your doctor before making any medical decisions. The views expressed by advertisers, guests, or contributors are their opinions and not necessarily the views of the Move It or Lose It podcast. Hello, welcome to part one of a two-part series with Dr. Brandon Bieber, doctor that we've grown to really appreciate and love. Hope you enjoy this one and then the next one tomorrow. So here we go, part one. Hello, welcome to another episode of Move It or Lose It. And today, I always say, one of our favorite doctors in the world, who I wish desperately was my neurologist, Dr. Brandon Bieber. We are so excited to have you with us today.
Thank you for having me, Kathy, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Hope you guys had a great New Year. Did you have some relaxing time?
We did, although we went to sleep very early. The only reason I stayed up to midnight was to film a YouTube video, which I published today, the day that we're filming this, about the multiple sclerosis quiz. That was the only reason I was up to midnight. I missed the countdown entirely.
You did? Oh, yes.
Although I did better than my wife, who fell asleep at about 9 p.m. So I outshined her at least.
I understand that. I actually rallied and then came downstairs with cheers, and it was already past midnight. I'm like, I did it for nothing. So I love the video. If you guys have not seen it, well, it'll be too late now, but go back and take the test, because I thought it was, I thought it was great. I did it and I was like, I never felt so smart. So I would say definitely take it. It's really good. You made it fun. And I thought it was great. So go for it. Take it.
You definitely have the advantage over most people, given that you're doing this all the time.
Doing it all the time, and I've had it for quite a few years. So I better know this. So thank you again for doing this. I've got my questions as always, but I really just try to take what the listeners have asked me to ask you, because you know, and I know that you are the number one doctor that they ask for when with my guests, my Move It or Lose It guests, they want to, what doctor do you want to hear from? Dr. Bieber. So you can feel very good about that. So one of the questions that people have had for you is our questions. Let's go back to that. So I want to talk to you about the efficacy, some of the drugs. Let's go into that first. So some of the things that you and I talked about were some of the concerns with a lot of the groups that I work with, and their confusion with, okay, I've been diagnosed with relapsing remitting. I'm concerned because my best friend, Susie, who was diagnosed with relapsing remitting, was put on Covaxin. And I was diagnosed
the same.
And they're putting me on Ocrevus or something, you know, something similar to that. Why is there such a huge difference?
Yeah, I think what you're getting at is, you know, how do we choose what medication someone should be on, or how should you choose? And this is an ongoing debate in the field, and it's still very controversial. And of course, everyone has their own personal preference and risk tolerance. And from the perspective of a neurologist, you know, we have our own biases, the way we've trained, our experiences in medicine, our own views about taking risks with pharmaceuticals. The inherent problem is there's sort of a correlation between the efficacy of multiple sclerosis disease modifying therapies and safety. What we'd like is to have a drug that's a once a day pill and it's 100% effective with no significant risk, but we just don't have that. You know, we have drugs that are very safe, such as glatiramer acetate, the injection Copaxone, or Glatopa, very low risk, no significant risk of weakening the immune system. But the results in clinical trials show a modest efficacy, and some people taking it just don't do that well. They could still have relapses or new MRI lesions despite taking it. Mm-hmm. We have stronger drugs like Ocrevus, rituximab, Kesimpta, ublituximab, newly FDA approved just a few days ago, Lentrada, hematopoietic stem cell transplant, cladribine. But all of these drugs have a significant risk of weakening the immune system. So right. Let's say you're a 25-year-old with newly diagnosed MS. You just had optic neuritis. Your vision went back to 20/20. You're feeling great. You're a CEO of your own company running marathons. Why should you take the risk of taking a significant immunosuppressant? So the sort of old school view is the idea of escalation therapy, which is start slow. Take something like one of the injectables, the beta interferons or glutathione or acetate, or maybe one of the pills for MS, Tecfidera, Aubagio. And then maybe if it doesn't work out, you can escalate to a stronger agent. But some people believe we should be doing the opposite, which is just start with the stronger drug, even in a young, healthy person with low disability with relapsing MS. And if you had asked neurologists 15 years ago, virtually all of them would favor escalation therapy. But there's sort of increasing evidence that it may be better to start with the stronger drugs up front. And the reason is simply that this is all about prevention of disability. These drugs don't enter the nervous system, generally speaking. They don't grow nerve tissue. They only prevent inflammation. And so if we see someone who's young, relatively low lesion burden, low disability, and prevent new inflammation, maybe this will have profound benefits 20 years later. And there's actually a lot of evidence for this. One would be observational studies. You know, if you kind of look at people who have taken stronger drugs, say Lemtrada or Ocrevus, and compare those people to those who have taken weaker drugs like Tecfidera or glutathione or acetate, on the average, people taking stronger drugs tend to do better. And there are various observational studies in different countries showing this. The problem with that method of research is it's potentially biased. It's not random who goes on what drug. Maybe people who are more well-educated, maybe people who do more multiple sclerosis research, maybe people who are healthier in other ways are more likely to choose the stronger medications, or maybe they have less other medical conditions, so they're more willing to tolerate the side effects. So that's not necessarily 100% accurate. However, there's some more evidence. For instance, in the randomized trials for the drug Tysabri, which is the once a month infusion, they actually had a long-term follow-up of people who are randomized to Tysabri versus people who are randomized to Avonex or randomized to placebo, depending on the trial. This is called the Strata dataset. And it ended, I think, around 2014, because after many, many years, you get less and less follow-up, and then it starts losing its meaning. But what they were able to demonstrate is long after the clinical trial ended, in other words, you had 2 years of Tysabri versus 2 years of something else, either placebo or Avonex, and so you're really only looking at a two-year difference in treatment. Even many years later, there was still a difference in disability. So starting on a stronger drug now seems to make a difference many years later.
Yeah.
Now, the best way to answer this question would actually be to do a randomized trial. And there are actually two ongoing randomized trials.
I was going to ask you.
Yeah, one is called the Treat MS trial. The other is called the Deliver MS trial. They've been going on for a while. I'm not exactly sure how close they are to completion, but probably fairly soon. But right. I can tell you my opinion right now is that very likely these studies are going to show that early high efficacy therapy is better on the average. Everyone's different. You know, I see some people with very mild disease. Maybe they had optic neuritis and just a few brain lesions, nothing in the spine. Should that person take Lemtrada or hematopoietic stem cell transplant? Well, maybe not. But I would say for the typical person with MS, with relapsing MS, I'm going to at least offer them high efficacy therapy right away. That's my personal opinion.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. And the doctor that I think you and I have talked about this before that I had years ago that has since 6 years ago passed, that was the way he did things as well. I started with Avonex with the very first neurologist that I ever had. You know, he was a neurologist that covered everything. So his MS knowledge wasn't as high as the doctor that I had switched to. However, you know, he started me with Avonex. And so it didn't keep me from relapsing. I had three children at that time. And so the doctor that I switched to, Dr. Howard Rossman, was just he was waiting. Tysabri was right on. I got into a little bit of the study and then the trial and then went on to that and did wonderful on it. So I agree with you. And of course, we're all different. There's no two people with MS that are the same. But for me, that did, I did very well. I was able to have a very pretty much normal life, was able to run half marathons, and he threatened severely me all the time with other Boston people who had done a full marathon and would constantly I'm like, how did they know I ran? They're right next to me. He would do that on purpose, things like that. And they would tell me like, ooh, that's a pretty tough one to do a full, because you really can't keep your temperature down. And I had a pretty bad relapse, and I'd see him over. I'm like, how did this person get next to me? But I did appreciate the fact that there is a limit as to what we can do. And so I always kept very active, but half marathons was my limit. And so I do tend to agree with you that starting in, that was like, so I want to say full on Tysabri was 2003. I might be a year off.
Well, that would be when the clinical trial started. It was approved in 2005.
Okay. So that's when I was fully on it. And then I just did great on it. And so I do truly believe in that. And I wonder with the studies and stuff, how do you believe in, is there, now I'm going to ask you a question just on your own belief in this. Do you think that it stems from not only where a patient comes from, as far as when they come in with their, coming to a neurologist with their symptoms, but do you think a lot of times it comes from their ethnicity as well?
Well, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with symptoms. You know, people who have had a worse history of MS are kind of more eager to go on stronger drugs and more willing to take risks. You know, imagine if you had transverse myelitis with paralysis and you were in a wheelchair for 6 months and, you know, you're recovering, pretty much whatever side effects I talk to you about will go right over your head. You'll be like, I don't care. I just want the strongest drug. Whereas someone who had maybe a little bit of numbness that went away in 4 days spontaneously isn't going to be quite as concerned. In terms of ethnicity, you know, generally speaking in medicine, there seems to be a bias where, you know, certain ethnicities tend to receive less treatment. They tend to be diagnosed later, like African Americans and Hispanics and Native Americans in the United States. And it's probably due to a lot of different factors. You know, one of them could certainly be the bias of their doctors. You know, there's another problem with a lot of underrepresentation in clinical trials of certain ethnicities. In the recent study for Briumvi, ublituximab, which is a B-cell depleter similar to Ocrevus that was just FDA approved.
What is the name of that again? Can you say that again?
Ublituximab or Briumvi.
Can you spell it?
off the top of my head, U-B-L-I-T-U-X-I-M-A-B, I believe.
Nice. Okay.
And, you know, I was looking at the clinical trials results because I was going to make a video on it. And it was something like 97% Caucasian in that study.
Okay.
Now, you know, generally speaking, I don't think there's going to be a huge difference in efficacy and safety in these medications in different ethnicities, but you never know. With the drug Ocrevus, they actually did have a very good study specifically in African Americans. But for most drugs and for most conditions in general, not just MS, there's a lot of underrepresentation of certain ethnicities in clinical trials.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I definitely see that. And I think that you knew that I've done a podcast on that. I specifically just did with Black people, and I just did that specifically on the drug companies and just not getting the quality healthcare that they should and the iniquities in that. And I just wanted to really have a really good conversation, and we did. And it ended at a very positive note and a very loving note, and where do we go from here and how to move forward. And so I really appreciate you talking about that with me. And I do believe like you do that we go harder and not softer and wait for it to get worse and then say, guess we better go stronger now. So I don't like that idea. But so I do believe now, as far as like the Tecfidera and stuff like that, I often hear patients that will be on something like Ocrevus or something like that, or Tysabri, and then a neurologist will come to them and say, you know, I know you've been on this, you don't like it. Not that it hasn't kept you from relapsing, but what do you think about going now to Tecfidera or something like that, a pill? So that often confuses me, especially when it's a client or somebody coming to me and telling me that. I obviously can't speak for the doctor, but it often confuses me because I think, isn't that going the opposite way, the opposite direction?
So you're talking about the idea of de-escalation.
Yes.
You know, so generally speaking, there's a lot of observational evidence that the difference of high efficacy therapy and low efficacy therapy is likely to be greatest in people with relapsing MS and people who are younger, essentially people who have the highest risk of relapses and making new MRI lesions. And there's this idea that, hey, maybe if you get older, particularly if you've been stable for a period of time, maybe you've had side effects from other medications, you know, maybe you don't need as strong of a medication. And that is something that I do believe in. You know, I have some patients who have been on immunosuppressants and maybe they got bad COVID or they had a bad UTI and were hospitalized and their MS is kind of stable. And, you know, I say, hey, maybe the risk to benefit ratio has shifted a little bit. And I think that's very reasonable. There's not a lot of evidence for that, but I do think sometimes that's a practical approach. Some people just aren't good candidates for immunosuppressants, and some people just don't want to take them. One thing I should have stressed earlier is, you know, when I say early high efficacy therapy is better, I mean that as a statistical average over a large group of people. Individually, there's going to be a lot of variation. Sure. I saw a patient earlier this morning who takes the drug Avonex, and she had multiple relapses taking Avonex and multiple gadolinium enhancing lesions. And I told her, look, I would advise you take a stronger medication. And I gave her some options and she reviewed it and she was very uncomfortable with it. And she ended up just staying on Avonex. And I followed her for several years. And she's actually very stable. And this is someone in their mid-50s who has very low amount of disability, despite taking a medication that may be doing nothing for her. And so there's a lot of individual variation.
Sure. Sure.
And some people just aren't comfortable taking immunosuppressants. And, you know, I may give advice, but people may just say, you know, I want to do something else, which is reasonable. I mean, these drugs have side effects. And I've been burned many times.
Sure. Absolutely. I'm sure. And I can't imagine as the neurologist, that's nerve wracking because you may want them to do something. They may choose to do something else and it can go one way or the other. So I'm sure I would not want to be in your shoes. Let's put it that way. So I'm sure that would be a bit difficult. So thank you for answering that. I hope and again, if you have more questions, you can always email me and I will bother Dr. Bieber again with these. So now moving from there, I wanted to ask you, I hit you up yesterday with some questions about, I was hearing a lot about M14 and what is this? People were saying, this is something you really need to know about. This is something you should know. It's going to be okay for you to take. You should probably think about taking this. Help us listeners who have never know nothing about this. What in the world is it?
Well, I'm glad you sent me an email about that because otherwise you definitely would have caught me off guard. So this is a study for the drug elezanumab. And, you know, I've heard about it quite a bit. In fact, like one popular content creator, Misguided Bits on Twitter and YouTube, actually entered the clinical trial for this drug. And she reported her experiences taking it and everything. So this drug is an antibody, a monoclonal antibody against RGMA, which stands for repulsive guidance molecule A, which is a protein that's involved in nerve sprouting. And it's thought to have a lot of significance in the development of the nervous system, but this is actually an inhibitor. So it blocks nerve sprouting. And this probably makes sense from the perspective of growing a central nervous system and then knowing when to stop growing so you're not creating a lot of unnecessary connections. But the thing is that humans don't really have great mechanisms for sprouting new axons within the central nervous system in the setting of injury. We simply have not evolved the ability to do that sufficiently. So the idea is maybe if we block this inhibitory signal in an area of injury, we can get some nerve regeneration. So that's the theory here. It's not an anti-inflammatory, it's sort of a regenerative therapy. And there was a successful phase one study that suggests it does get to the central nervous system. It seems to be relatively safe. They were able to look at some cerebrospinal fluid biomarkers. It may even have slight inflammatory or anti-inflammatory effects. And so they move forward with a phase two study, which is actually a randomized controlled trial. And it wasn't a big trial, but they were hoping to show some signs of benefit in people getting it versus placebo in people with multiple sclerosis. And this is the M14 study that you're talking about. And, you know, I could not find an actual publication. I can send you the link to the clinicaltrials.gov site just so people can see the details of the study. Sure. But the results were posted on social media and were presented at multiple sclerosis conferences like ECTRIMS. And basically, unfortunately, the drug did not show any benefit to people with MS. And they looked at things like time 25-foot walk, how far you could walk, the 9-hole peg test, which is sort of a measure of hand coordination, and EDSS, Expanded Disability Status Scale, sort of an overall measure of disability. And unfortunately, there were no differences. So I don't know if they're not going to pursue further research on this drug or if they are in a different way. It's actually being studied in some other diseases like spinal cord injury or stroke, but right now it doesn't look like it's going to be an MS drug.
Okay. Now, I did hear some things about like people that were having like severe drop foot. Now that they were taking that and it was helping drop foot. Have you heard anything like that?
Well, I know Misguided Bits said she, you know, saw some possible benefits, you know, subjectively. And but, you know, when they did the statistical analysis, you know, using these tests, they weren't able to find anything. So unfortunately, if it helps, they weren't able to prove it.
Okay. Okay. Good. Thank you for answering that. So again, we'll just keep looking, and if we'll have at the bottom of the show notes the link to that study.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to know that it, you know, I admire people who enter clinical trials. It, you know, it's very important. It's also very attractive to get a new treatment that's not available yet. But you do have to, you know that not all of them pan out. Some of them end up being unproven or, frankly, ineffective. This wasn't a dangerous treatment. It seemed to be safe. It just wasn't clear that it did anything beneficial.
Right. Okay. Good to know. Thank you for that. And then the other one that I know that we did touch on during the webinar, thank you again for doing that. That was really, really something that I deeply appreciated. So did so many of the listeners. You got many compliments for that, and really appreciated that. And of course, one of my favorite women in the world, Jen Powell, who's also one of your patients, just really, really loved it. And I think she saw you that day. That you were with me, and she just really enjoyed the webinar and really enjoyed having you there. So thank you again for that. But I know that we touched on this, so if you could go through it again and help us with a little bit of light on that, can we talk a little bit more about the pineal gland and the thought to be common, beginning again, the calcification of that, and how does that affect multiple sclerosis? And that ends our first part. So join us tomorrow for the second part of our part two series with Dr. Brandon Bieber. So grateful to have him on again. See you tomorrow. Well, thank you so much for joining us today on Move It or Lose It podcast, where you can again find us wherever you like your podcast, whether it's Apple, Spotify, Stitcher. Join us on that. And we can't wait to see you again. We're going to have a lot of exciting guests and working together. And as always, you'll hear us say at the end of every podcast, we are stronger together. So let's do it. Let's become stronger together. Have a great day.